are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
As my first baseman or corner infield in an AL only, or, a bench bat in a 15-team mix, that's totally fine with me, but he's not much more than that to me.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, I appreciate that, and, I might scare people off during baseball season because I just tweet about dongs all day.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for Friends of FantasyBenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is the man, Bubba Entrekin. Of what is Sports Deegans? I always mess up your name. I mess up your site. What am I doing? I'm the worst host of all time. Bubba, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's always good being on here. You can mess it up anytime you want. Just have me as a guest, and we'll be just fine. Because honestly, you got over half of it right, and I've been called way worse. So this is not a problem at all.
No, I mess up everybody's names when they come on. It's just I don't know how I continue to do it. But why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself for those who don't know who you are? Everybody should know who you are by now, but I'm sure there's one or two people that may not have come across your work, and then talk about your site and what you guys do over there.
Well, I appreciate that, and I might scare people off during baseball season because I just tweet about dongs all day. But you can find me on Twitter at BDEntrick, and the website is thesportsdegens.com, at thesportsdegens, and we cover fantasy, gambling, DFS, season-long. And then there's other just regular stuff. We do UFC. I podcast almost daily, not as much as Justin, but I have my own Bench with Bubba that covers almost always fantasy baseball, and then we'll mix in some other things just when I feel like it. And then we have PGA DFS, NFL DFS, we have, like I said, UFC, and much, much more. And then when baseball season starts every Monday through Friday, I'll do an MLB DFS podcast in the morning called Quick Hits. So, check out SD Radio, or each of the podcasts have their own handle on the iTunes, SoundCloud, all those places. But, yeah, thesportsdegens.com has all the stuff at one spot.
And if you're on Twitter and you play DFS, you have to follow Bubba. I mean, it's a must. I check Bubba's feed before I lock in my lineups for the day, DFS. And you had a big hit last year. You won, like, what, 20 grand, something like that?
50.
Yeah.
There's a name we're going to discuss tonight that is near and dear to my heart from that night. I'm going to get into that. I remember exactly where I was sitting and when it took place, and it was great for many reasons we'll talk about. And one last thing I want to mention, I do it on my Twitter feed, like you said, is when lineups come out, like an hour before game times, I'll tweet out things that I see. We formed a Sports Degen Slack chat, which is free to enter. It's not like a paid site, but it's more just so people that are kind of don't like to ask questions in a big forum, they can talk to each other, and then our guys jump in and out, or we've got guests from Fantasy Alarm and stuff jump in and out. And whoever wants to come in, Justin, if you ever want to come in and talk fantasy baseball, whoever wants to come in, it's just a small forum for people to chat and get some info.
Well, that sounds awesome. You'll definitely have to add me after we're done recording, because I'm all about getting little DFS tips here and there. So, let's talk some baseball. We got one signing that's happened recently. That's Logan Morrison signing with the Minnesota Twins. He's going to be their full-time DH, it appears. So, it seems that Miguel Sano is going to be manning third more often, unless this is more about suspension insurance in case Sano does get suspended. What are your thoughts on Logan Morrison with the Twins?
It's an interesting move. It's a shame that I don't know who he made angry in a past life, because the season he put together last year, the market we're seeing these days, he got well under what many projected him to get. The power, to me, it might not be as insane as it was last year, but it's legit. It definitely plays, and it could have played in some parks, I think, that could have used him. But he goes to Minnesota, which it isn't as bad as it once was. They made some adjustments to right field for the ball to carry more. It's not bad for lefties, plays better for righties. It's an interesting move. Late round, deep leagues, he definitely flyer ability, I would guess. But it is interesting. I want to see how it plays out. Like you said, is he going to be DH only? Is this, insurance in case Sano gets suspended? How does it all play? Because when he was in Tampa Bay, we knew he was getting his playing time and he produced. This could be different in Minnesota, so I'll have to play it out there. But it's not a bad move. Great for Minnesota if you're a Twins fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect for Minnesota because, like I said, and like you mentioned, if Miguel Sano does get suspended, you know, you just throw Eduardo Escobar at third, and then you've got, you know, you still got a power guy in the middle of the lineup in Logan Morrison as long as he's healthy. And hopefully, you know, staying at DH will keep him healthy. And Sano's obviously got weight issues and his own health issues, so I'm not too worried that Morrison will lose any sort of plate appearances at bats. I mean, this is crushing for Eduardo Escobar, but they'll figure out ways to get him in, whether it's giving Sano days off or moving him around the diamond or something like that. But it's an okay move. I've never been much of a Morrison guy. I just, you know, he's never delivered until last year on that kind of promise we all thought that he would have when he hit 23 home runs in 2011. It's just all been downhill from there. Last year, pops 38. Obviously, there's going to be some regression coming. I wouldn't expect him to hit, you know, 38 home runs. 25 to 30 sounds about right, yeah. which is fine, and considering there is no price attached, I'm totally okay with, you know, as my first baseman or corner infield in an AL only, or, you know, as, you know, a bench bat in a 15-team mix. That's totally fine with me, but he's not much more than that to me.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
All right, let's move on, talk about some more interesting guys. We're going to start our third base preview tonight, and we'll start off with some of the big boys. We'll start with Manny Machado, who's had a little bit of draft helium since it was announced that he's going to be playing shortstop this year, and Chris Bryant, a former NL MVP, is going a tad bit lower than we kind of gotten used to him, both going around each other in ADP. So who would you rather have and why, Chris Bryant versus Manny Machado?
You know, honestly, when I first saw these two names, it was pretty simple to me. And then when you dig in on it, it is a little, if you just look stats, it's a lot closer than you'd think. And I want to take the whole shortstop thing out of it because that's everyone's angle that makes Machado valuable. But you know what? There's, so like we briefly discussed earlier, shortstop's deep this year. So you're playing Machado at third base if you're getting him. That's what you're doing. You're enjoying him for the year there. But both these guys, 30 homer powers, Machado's three straight years of 30 home runs. He finally stole some bases last year, back up to 9 stolen bases, something that hopefully he can play into. And then if you want a silly narrative, if you don't want to be a stats guy, he is going into his free agent year. And that makes a lot of weird things happen for players. They want that money, and they go for it. So you got that when you're looking at Machado, but you got Chris Bryant. He's coming off to some a down year, still 29 homers, 111 runs scored, only 73 ribbies. That did stink, but a .295 average. There is a lot to like about Chris Bryant, obviously. In 2016, he had 39 homers. I think you can pencil him in for 30-plus. Both these guys, you can't really go wrong. I prefer Chris Bryant. I like the lineup that's around him. I think this kid is still getting better. And I say kid, Machado's younger than Chris Bryant, which is crazy, by a few months. But I would go Chris Bryant. You can't go wrong here. But, yeah, Chris Bryant for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's Chris Bryant for me, too. And I love Manny Machado, but and I think the kind of the downturn in average we saw, especially at the beginning of the season last year, was more BABIP related. And I don't always like to rely just on, you know, it always being BABIP, but I think it was pretty understandable why. I mean, he just got creamed in the average on balls in play. You know, and I know people, like you said, are going to like flock, and they are. They're flocking to the fact that Machado has shortstop eligibility, but, you know, shortstops actually in 15-team mixed as a position, they earned more than third base last year. So, like, in I think shortstop is deeper than third base, and we'll talk about it a little bit more as we kind of get lower into some of the other matchups. You know, I'd much rather have Marcus Semien or an Orlando Arcia, or guys of that ilk than some of the guys who are going around that same area at third base. It just, to me, there's a lot more safety. There's a lot more multi-category producers at shortstop. So I think a lot of people are flocking to Manny Machado and, you know, the guy we'll talk about next and Alex Bregman because they've got the shortstop eligibility too. And don't get me wrong, flexibility is always nice. But at the end of the day, I think you're going to end up having to use him at shortstop more often than people think. So I'm going Bryant, but, you know, I think they're both amazing options.
Yep.
Let's talk about Josh Donaldson versus Alex Bregman. You've got the seasoned vet who's coming off kind of a down year and has been really pushed down a lot of people's boards. And then the up-and-coming guy who, you know, broke out last season and people are expecting more things from. So who would you rather have, Josh Donaldson versus Alex Bregman?
Yeah, and this one was interesting because if you don't look at numbers, it's strictly – like you said, everyone's on the Bregman train. They're all aboard it, and it's because they think the shortstop plays. I love the veteran Donaldson. I know he's coming off a injury season, only played 113 games, but in 113 games, he hit 33 home runs. Prior to 2017, from 2013 to 16, he played 155 or more games. So he had an injury last year. Prior to that, very, very reliable, 37 and 41 homers prior to that. The power is legit, plays in a great ballpark. Lineup won't be as good as it once was, but when he plays a full year, he's going 122 and 122 runs in 15 and 16, 100-plus RBIs previous 2 years, and he hits for average. For a guy that hits with as much power as he hits, he's hitting 280-plus most years, and in OBP leagues, he's outstanding. And that's a stat that a lot of leagues are going to. I know you talk about it a lot, Justin, some of these new stats that OBP, saves, holds, different things people are looking at. He's a 370, 380, he gave 400 in 2016. Even in an injury year last year, 385 OBP. That's tremendous. That's big-time stuff. So I really, really like Josh Donaldson. I think he's got a bounce-back year in him, another guy going into his free agent year. And the power is legit. I wouldn't be shocked if he's up there with the Judges and Stantons and Joey Gallo's at the AL home run totals by the end of the season. And that's why I like him more than Bregman. Bregman's good average, but you know, comparable to Donaldson. Donaldson might be better. Where Donaldson smokes him in is in the RBIs and the home runs to me. Now, Bregman gets a few more steals, scores some more runs, but it's really not as close as I once thought it was, given if anybody's going to make a jump, Bregman's young enough to make that jump. But I go Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I think people are sleeping on Josh Donaldson for
big time.
You know, obviously, because he missed so many games last year with a calf issue. But, I mean, he finished strong. I mean, and he was amazing. He, like you said, 33 home runs, 78 RBIs in 113 games.
It's crazy.
That's amazing. And like I said, he walks a ton, has walked over 15% the last 2 years. For this era, he doesn't strike out very much. This is a guy that's probably going to hit 285, 380, 540. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Outstanding.
And, like, don't get me wrong, I love Alex Bregman, you know. And if you're looking for, you know, a guy who maybe offers five categories, because obviously Donaldson's not really going to steal, you know, he might get, you know, a handful of stolen bases here and there. I understand why people prefer him. But the idea that he's going virtually inside the top 30 right now is a bit insane to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't. I can't do that.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to add real quick before we go on is, you know, Donaldson's the fifth third baseman off the board, but he's going almost 30th overall. I'd honestly rather wait on him instead of Machado and Bryant and take, you know, one of the big four starting pitchers there, or maybe get your shortstop in Correa there, or a big-time outfielder with power there. That's my opinion, and I'd go for Donaldson, given you're not going to have the 15th and 30th pick. But that's you know what I'm saying. I'd almost rather wait and get Donaldson because I think his production is just as good, if not better, than Bryan Machado.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the nice things about it. If you have, like, a top three pick, is a lot of times you can luck in to, like, a Josh Donaldson at the, you know, at the wheel on the second and third rounds. It's it's amazing. I mean, he was a top, you know, 10 pick coming into last year, and we're giving a 20 pick discount based on the fact that he was injured for a little while. And I know he's older; he's 32 years old, and people are worried that, you know, maybe this is a sign of things to come. But like you mentioned, he'd played in at least 155 games in each of the previous four seasons. You know, I'm not going to write him off after one injury. This is not Hunter Pence. This is not Miguel Cabrera.
You had to bring up the Giants.
Well, I mean, you know, but that's an example of someone who, you know, was an Iron Man until he wasn't. You know, but I'm not buying that. You know, give me the shares of Donaldson all day long. All right, here's an interesting one because you got two guys who kind of broke out last year. Though some people say that Justin Turner, you know, started the breakout much earlier than Travis Shaw, but both had breakout seasons last year. Both offer kind of different kind of skill sets at the position. So who would you rather have versus Justin Turner versus Travis Shaw?
Yeah, this one's intriguing just because people think they remember Travis Shaw from last year, mayor of Ding Dong City. He goes and hits 31 home runs in his first year in Milwaukee. But what I want to ask people is, what do you trust? Because in 2016, in 145 games with the Red Sox, he had 16 homers. Last year, he had 144 games with the Brewers. He had 70 more at-bats, but still, that's not going to get you a 15 home run bump. Let's be realistic. His average jumped from 242 to 273. BABIP wasn't a huge jump, so yes, he did hit better. The part that really worries me with Travis Shaw, I think he's a very good hitter. Not taking that away from him at all. But everyone already knows the changes that have been made in Milwaukee with the Yelich and the Ozuna, you know, talent being brought in. And he already talks about Ryan Braun coming and playing the infield, playing first base. And Travis Shaw has tremendous negative splits, lefties-righties. He only played 83 games again, or 140 at-bats versus lefties last year compared to 398 versus righties. But 250 to 281 average, some might not squawk at that. But five homers compared to 26 homers, when you can put a Braun in at first, or even a Jesus Aguilar who hit lefties very, very well, there's a lot to think about with Shaw. Are you going to get the production you need in that spot that you can get from the guy you mentioned, Justin Turner, who has been building up, he's ramping up his production, and he played very well last year. 130 games, gave you 21 homers. He's consistent. He's not going to be flashy, but he's going to hit. He hit 322 last year, 275, 294, 340. Those are his last four seasons. Another good OBP guy. He's got 20-plus homer power, does well versus lefties and righties, doesn't run a ton, but neither does Shaw. It really comes down to, do you think Shaw gets the playing time? If so, not bad. But if you want the stability and the better batting average upside, I would go Justin Turner. But you got to pay attention to that Milwaukee situation. So Justin Turner for me.
Oh, see, I'm going the other way. It's definitely Travis Shaw for me. I don't see any playing time concerns because he's going to be the starting third baseman. And they don't have – I mean, unless they're planning on playing Hernan Perez a lot.
Hernan Perez kind of worries me a little bit.
But he's going to be platooning with Jonathan Villar at second. So, okay. I think Shaw is going to be able – I think Yelich and the Kane – you know, acquisitions for the Brewers, it really benefits Shaw. They're going to be batting 1-2 in front of him. He's going to have Braun and Domingo Santana batting behind him. That, to me, is like he's in like a money spot in a fantastic lineup, in a fantastic park. That park was built for him. That's why he had these one of the reasons he had this huge jump in power. And then I love the fact that he's stealing bases. 10 stolen bases, 31 home runs. Like you said, 273, 349, 513. Maybe the average takes, you know, a little bit of regression back, but I don't think it's going to, you know, like Steamer and depth charts have them both, you know, around 250. I think that's a little bit too conservative for me. I'm more in like a 260, 265 kind of range, you know, a 335 OBP, something like that, with 28 to 32 home runs. Again, you know, 8-9 stolen bases, 100 RBIs. For me, I like Justin Turner. I've never actually been a huge Justin Turner guy. One, I don't care about average as much as a lot of other people. People hear me say it all the time on this podcast and the other podcasts I'm on. I love to punt batting average. So the fact that he's got a huge average to me isn't as tantalizing as it is to others. You know, to me, it's the amount of games that he misses. You know, he only has one season with over 130 games played in his entire career.
That
to me is troublesome. And the Dodgers have a lot of moving parts, you know, especially with the news that that Barnes is not going to be able to catch and is going to have to play second. Well, Now, Forsyth needs more spots to play. You know, you've got Chris Taylor who's going to need spots to play. You know, you've got a ton of outfielders in that situation. They could always acquire more people. You know, I just think that Turner's getting older. He's injury prone already. I'd rather not have that in my lineup. Give me the younger guy in Shaw in the better park with, I think, the better lineup, personally.
I hope it's the better lineup just for our Giants fandom. I'll tell you that much, but I don't like that at all. It's just a matter of, do you believe in the increase in the power and everything? And I agree with everything you said. It's just, if you believe in that, okay, if you want more, I guess, consistency stat-wise, sure, the games aren't played, that's where I would go Turner. But, yeah, totally agree.
All right, now you got two guys that coming off of big seasons, but both have huge question marks. One is Mike Moustakas, who has not signed anywhere, which is obviously a real issue for his fantasy value because he needs a team in order to accumulate stats. And then you have Jake Lamb, who is virtually a power-only guy, and he's got great power, but the addition of the Humidor is scaring a lot of people. You're seeing his stock increasingly plummet. What are your thoughts on Mike Moustakas versus Jake Lamb?
Yeah, this one's really interesting when you look at it, because you got Moustakas coming off a great year, as you said, but he's got nowhere to play. He has nowhere to go. So what do you do? I know you had that AL-only auction recently, and you were taking gambles on guys at a discount, and that's what you can get right now, because you never know if he signs in the right place. His value might go up, but really there's nowhere that I see him signing that his value goes up. This was the first year he kind of broke out of the power. He's always been around a 15 to 20 homer guy. Hits 38 homers, hit 272. He showed a lot of things he hasn't really done consistently. I like him. I like him a lot. If the Yankees sign him, yeah, sign me up, because that's short portion, right? I absolutely love it. Now, if he goes to Atlanta, would be a great spot. We know the ball flies out to right. But if he goes to a place that's just not like the same, it's going to be tough. It's really tough to decide where that goes. Now, you got Jake Lamb, who the Humidor are scaring everybody. Back-to-back years of 29 and 30 homers, like almost identical stat lines the last 2 years. Batting average across the board, everything looks pretty darn solid. This is the guy that's near and dear to my heart, because he had a two-run homer off the Dodgers in the eighth inning that pushed me into first place in that DFS night. So I love Jake Lamb, and I agree. You know, you've had Derek Carty on your podcast, and he did a great Twitter thread and other articles about that Humidor, and it's tough to really know for a fact, but the numbers they've shown with Colorado, it's pretty accurate, and it will affect Lamb more than, like, Goldie and some, but I still think his power is pretty darn legit. Like, I still could see a 25 home run guy. So, and he still plays in Coors. I like Jake Lamb a lot, especially the fact he's got a home. So I'll go Jake Lamb right now. But if Moose gets the right spot, give me, like, Yankee Stadium, give me Moose.
Oh, man, this is a hard one, because these are both really two tough guys that I really have liked in the past. But like I said, yeah, both have really big question marks. I mean, Lamb hit 16 of his 30 homers at home. So let's say that he gets a reduction of 25%. He loses 25% of his home runs. So he's losing four home runs, so he's hitting 26.
I'm saying 25 plus, I'll still take it.
Yeah, that's not bad. The big issue with Lamb is the average sucks. Yeah. You know, and that's the scary part. But, you know, the same issues could be said for Moustakas, who, you know, 2016 hit 240. So, you know, and he's one of those guys that seems to, like, bounce around. You know, he's actually the example I used in my piece on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide, which will be available for purchase on Amazon tomorrow. In my punt batting average article, this is why I punt batting average, because in the last four seasons, Mike Moustakas has batted 212, 284, 240, and 272. So if you're doing projections, good luck trying to figure out what Mike Moustakas' batting average is going to look like. You know, and that's even if we knew where he was going. I think he obviously he's going to sign somewhere. I think that he's going to end up in New York. You know, I think with the JD Martinez signing being finalized, New York, the Yankees are going to feel a little pressure to maybe add another piece to try to, you know, kind of keep their advantage over the Red Sox. So I have a feeling he ends up with the Yankees. If he doesn't, I don't think it's going to happen in Atlanta, but I think St. Louis could jump in. They could obviously, you know, move Matt Carpenter over to first base or second base. Especially considering the issues he's had with his arm. I don't know if they necessarily want him throwing across the diamond every day. So I think there's a good chance he ends up in either New York or St. Louis, both of which are better parks than he was faced with last year in Kansas City and Kauffman. So I'm not too worried about where he ends up. As long as he signs before opening day, I'm happy. So I'm going to go Moustakas.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
All right. Let's move on, talk about, again, another kind of grizzled vet who isn't getting very much respect this year, and a guy who's an up-and-comer. You got Rafael Devers versus Kyle Seager. Who do you prefer?
This one is tough. Like, it comes down to, you want to gamble or do you want some consistency? Because I actually love Rafael Devers. This kid, everything I've seen, read, I've talked to a couple prospect guys. I know you, Matt Thompson, he's a big-time prospect guy with you guys. There is a lot to like about Rafael Devers. You look at his numbers, Dave's gotten better and better throughout the minors. From Double A to the majors, he combined for 30 homers last year. Sure, that was out of the norm for him. But from what everything I've been told and read, this is legit. Like, he has that kind of power. And, you know, Steamer's conservative with their projections. They're still giving him 19 everywhere else, 23, zips 27 homers. The kid's going to be in the middle to maybe fifth, sixth in that Red Sox lineup. And the biggest thing to me is, I think his average is legit. He's a 280 to 290 guy pretty easily, in my opinion. The swing is there. Ralph Lifshitz, Prospect Jesus, he said he saw him a lot in the minors, and he compares him to like a Mike Trout type player. Him and Acuna, he is tremendously huge on. Absolutely loves the power with Devers. So I'm a big fan. But he's young. He might have some hiccups. You got Kyle Seager, like you said, the grizzled vet, consistent, though. 25-plus homers, 4 straight years, 20 or more, 6 straight years. All the projections have him at 26, 28. One thing I did read about last year is he's really bought into the fly ball launch angle revolution, and it showed in his splits between the first half and the second half. He really struggled in the first half of the season, only hitting 10 homers in 86 games. In the second half, 68 games, he had 17 of his home runs. He hit for a better average in fewer games, struck out about the same, so he's buying into that, you know, three true outcomes of the game, basically. But he's as consistent as they come. Sure, the average isn't ideal of late. He had a good average overall in his career. We know what you're going to get with Seager. The lineup might be a little better with D. Gordon in town to get in front of there with Cruz and Cano. It's a very old team. Very old team there in Seattle. It's tough. I'm going to go with Rafael Devers, but the other factor you mentioned, you know, Devers is going about 120, and you have Seager going about 140. So that's a 20-pick difference that makes it really interesting. But I'll go Rafael Devers.
Yeah, that again, another hard one. Do you want the upside in a Devers, or do you want – because you can kind of pencil in what you're going to get from Kyle Seager. I think last year, the dip in the average – obviously, some, you know, he got a little bit unlucky in the BABIP department. 262 BABIP when he's got, you know, he has a career 285 BABIP. I think he's pretty easily will bump right back up to kind of his career numbers in terms of average. So, you know, 265, 270, something like that. You can pretty much pencil in 26, 27, 28 home runs for Seager. You're just looking at a ceiling of Devers that could be, you know, what Zip says. It could be like 27 to 30 home runs, 80 to 90 runs in RBIs each, you know, a handful of stolen bases. I mean, the kid, you know, in his major league debut, went 284, 338, 482 in 58 games. Had 10 home runs, 3 stolen bases, you know, great lineup, really nice park. There's a lot to love about Devers. For me, it's all about lineup construction. If you've taken risks earlier on, go with the vet. Go with a guy you know you can pencil in his stats. You know, a lot of people don't love, you know, Edwin Encarnacion because he's older, because he's not the sexy pick, but he offers stability, and that's what Seager offers. You know, if you have already taken gambles early on, then you take the guy who's more stable and that, you know, the more guaranteed production. If you've got a pretty stable offense already, then you take the guy like Devers. You take the upside. You take the, you know, the up-and-coming guy because you already have some bankable stats in there. So for me, it's all about roster construction. If I have to pick in a vacuum, oh, give me the upside in Devers. I just love the kid so much. He's so fun to watch hit.
He's awesome. With that homer off of Chapman was great. Mm-hmm. Roster Resource has him penciled in the five spot, and that lineup would be tremendous. And one other reason why I think there is still much more to be seen here, like you were saying, last year in just his brief 58 games in the pros, it was his highest K percentage of his career and one of the lowest walk percentages of his career. In the minors, he was below, basically 17% or below for most of his minor league career. He's up to almost 24% last year as he's getting his feet wet, one would say. So this kid is legit, and I wouldn't be shocked if he takes that next step.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Evan Longoria versus Eugenio Suarez. Longoria moves to our San Francisco Giants. You know, full disclosure, we're both Giants fans. So Suarez is still manning third base in Cincinnati. So do you believe in a bounce back now that Longoria is in San Francisco, or are you going with Suarez?
Yeah, as much as I'd love for Longo to have like a massive bounce back, let's be real, he's older. The one thing I love about him, it's kind of the Seager thing, but not to that extreme. He's consistent. He's going to get you around 20 homers. He's going to hit for a decent average. There is a lot to like in that respect when it comes to Longo. But at this point in the draft, when you're talking Longo going about 202 and Suarez going about 196, I'm going Suarez. I love the power upside in that ballpark. And you look at his splits, his home road splits are very dramatic. He did his power damage in Great American Small Park. That happened. It was there. But, hey, that's 81 games a year, so give it to me. The concern is there's a great young prospect in Nick Senzel, but they are trying him at short, which could be tremendous for Suarez. The average, I think Longo can get him in the average department, but I think that power upside, because you know as well as I do, when you've kind of roster construction-wise, you're usually looking for that big power bat sometimes late in a draft, or if you're looking for power, Suarez is tremendous. If you're looking for average, maybe Longo. But Longo, to me, doesn't have the upside a Suarez could have. Suarez could have 30-plus homer upside. Where Longo in AT&T Park, you're looking 20. If he is 25, he's had a great year. So I'm going to go Suarez. What say you?
I'm going to preface this first thing by saying I would rather have the next guy we're going to talk about in the next grouping than both of these guys.
Oh, yes. I agree completely.
So, there is little to no chance that I end up with either one of these guys on my fantasy team. So, that being said, I'm going to go Suarez, I'm going to go Longoria because I just don't trust the playing time issues. I know they're trying Senzel out at shortstop. I just don't buy that is going to continue to work over the course of an entire season. I think at worst they're going to move Senzel between the two positions once he's up. I think his ultimate home needs to be shortstop, or it needs to be third base. I don't think he has the range for shortstop. So I think there will be playing time issues down the stretch for Suarez. And if they decide to move Suarez to make room for Senzel, that becomes an even bigger problem because, like you said, he makes a lot of his hay in the fact that he's playing in Cincinnati. If for some reason he was moved out of Cincinnati, that would not be good for his value. So I think Longoria, he's only a season removed from hitting .273 with 36 home runs. I know the park isn't great in San Francisco, but it plays a lot better for right-handed hitters than it does for lefties, and obviously Longoria is a righty. He's not as old as people think he is. He's only 32. I think there is still time for Longoria, especially if he can fix some of the issues with his mechanics and his swing. Sammy Reed, I don't know if I mentioned on this podcast or another podcast, but Sammy Reed over at Baseballholics Anonymous podcast, which you should be subscribed to if you are not already, did a fantastic breakdown of Longoria's swing and the hitch that's in it, and it's been in it for about a year and a half or so. a couple episodes ago. I implore you to go listen to it because I cannot do it justice trying to regurgitate the information. So definitely go check that out over Baseball Hawks Anonymous. But I think maybe a new hitting coach, they could iron some things out with Longoria, new park, you know, new change of scenery, and maybe he has a revival in his career. So, like I said before, though, it's unlikely I own either of these guys this year.
Agreed. Agreed. Because, yeah, Longo, I could see doing it, but it's tough. I don't want anything to do with either one of these guys.
All right, let's talk about the guy I actually do want. And I've already gotten a lot of shares. I will continue to get a lot of shares. Got a little freaked out when they said he had a hand issue earlier late last week, but that seems to be okay. And obviously I'm talking about Matt Chapman of the Oakland A's. Young guy came up, just demolished the ball when he came up. And we're going to go again versus an old grizzled vet signed in New York to play for the Mets, Todd Frazier. Who would you rather have, Matt Chapman versus Todd Frazier?
Oh, I am all aboard the Matt Chapman train. This guy, he combined for 30 home runs last year in the pros and the minors. He 36 combined in 2016. He's increased. I've heard interviews on, like, I believe it was MLB Pipeline and some other podcasts. He has continued to work on his uppercut swing, and it shows each year through his progression. And there's nothing fake about this power. I wouldn't be shocked if we see him approaching 35 to 40 someday. It'd be great if he hit in a really good ballpark, but this kid is legit. The part that stinks is the batting average. He's never really going to be a big-time guy. If he hits 250, you are happy as can be. The batting average will be a concern, but like you said, you don't concern yourself with batting average, and I get it. I rarely do, especially if I get one or two guys early, then I throw completely out the window. I don't care. But at the point of the draft where you're getting a Matt Chapman, like you said, at pick 287 for 30-plus home runs, it is tremendous. This can help all your problems in a heartbeat. Corner infield position, third base position, he's huge. Frazier's good and all. Don't get me wrong. He's a grizzled vet, like you said. Still brings good power to the plate. Gives you a few steals, but last year he only had 4 stolen bases, so maybe that goes away. He's not. I think he's maxing out at 10, but to me his batting average is even worse than Chapman. Their stolen bases will be about the same. I love the upside with the youngster. This point in the draft is when I am taking most of my gambles if I have to, and I love Matt Chapman.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm a big Matt Chapman guy. One, just he crushes the ball. Like, if you go back and watch some of these home runs, he just absolutely destroys the ball. And I know his teammate, Matt Olson, is getting all the helium, but I'm totally cool with that because I'm totally happy to grab all the shares of Matt Chapman, a guy who, like you said, like, could legitimately hit 35 home runs in a full season. And a lot of people look at the average and they get scared off and they go, well, how is he going to continue to be in the lineup every day if he's hitting 240 or 230 or 220? Here's the reason. He is a gold glove caliber third baseman. Like, he is fantastic defensively. He will be in the lineup even when he struggles offensively and when he goes through slumps because he walks. He has double-digit walk rates virtually all throughout the minor leagues. You know, walked almost 10% of the time in his major league debut of 84 games last year. And then he's great with a glove, and he's got a great arm. So he's going to be in the lineup every day no matter how much he struggles. That's one thing in fantasy we don't talk enough about is defense sometimes matters, especially for young guys. You know, if he can play good defense, that'll go a long way in making sure he's getting regular at bats and hitting those bombs. And that's what you're getting him for. You're getting him for 30 home runs late in your draft. You know, I've been a Todd Frazier guy in the past, but the skills have obviously declined. The power is still there. He does walk too. And I think his playing time is guaranteed as well in New York. They wouldn't have signed him to that deal if it wasn't. But at the end of the day, I think Chapman has the higher upside, so I'm going with Chapman. All right, let's finish out with two prospect guys. They're young, you know, they're both unproven. So I want to know who you'd rather have. Would you rather have Nick Senzel, who probably won't start the year in the majors, or J.P. Crawford, who probably will?
This one was harder than I thought it was going to be because I love everything about Nick Senzel. I really, really do. And I think in the end, spoiler alert, going to go with Nick Senzel in this debate. I think his upside is tremendous. They both play in great ballparks. I just think his power is much more what I'm looking for at the corner infield position. Yeah, sure, you can play J.P. Crawford at short. And like we said with Bregman and Machado, Crawford might be the exception where you do play him at short because you're getting him so late in the draft. This is different, totally different. So that kind of does add a little value to this. I get the a lot closer debate here. It's just I really was big on Crawford, and I know it was a small sample size last year, but I did not like what I saw. Given they moved him all over the infield, the way they used him last year was just horrible. He did play great in the minors, showed power he hadn't had before. He can steal you. He's like a 15-15 guy right now with okay average. The average hasn't been great. I think Senzel can be even more than that. And I might be just talking out of school here. I'm into the prospects, not an expert by any means. But I think Senzel could potentially be a 20-homer guy, and he's already got 15-plus steal ability. And he brings the batting average that J.P. Crawford does not bring. That's the difference maker for me. So I'm going Nick Senzel, but you got Crawford at short. He's already going to be starting the season with him. It just depends on your comfort level, but Senzel for me.
Yeah, it's Senzel for me, too. I think you got power, you got speed from Senzel. My biggest issue with Senzel was he had his season cut short last year because he was having vertigo issues. Now, those can always crop up, but they appear to be past him at this point. And it just, you know, Crawford, he's going to be a good defensive player, and so I think he's going to get at bats, but, you know, he's going to be Andrelton Simmons, obviously not as good with a glove, but you know, similar, without the offensive upside that we saw this last year with Simmons. So we're talking about a guy who probably hits 5 to 10 home runs, steals 5 to 10 bases, you know, hits 250 to 260. That really doesn't move the needle for me. So, you know, he's best served as a middle infield option in NL only. But this year, coming into drafts, he won't have middle infield eligibility. He'll only be eligible at third base in majority of formats. So I'm probably not going to have any shares of J.P. Crawford at any point in his career, but definitely not in 2018. Senzel, I probably won't have a ton of shares coming into the season. Them trying him out at shortstop tells me that it's that's a really good reason for them to keep him down until July. Like, there's no reason for them to start Nick Senzel's clock.
Well, especially a team on a rebuild like that.
Why exactly. You know, they're not competing for anything, so why would they want to start his clock? So I think at earliest he's up in July or August. I think unless you have unlimited minor league stashes, you know, you're playing in a dynasty keeper league, obviously he's going to be a guy that is either owned or you're targeting. But in redraft, it is really hard to roster a guy like that in this day and age with a 10-day DL, with the amount of injuries we see on, you know, a weekly basis. You're not going to be able to hold a guy like that on your bench. And if you do, you're wasting, you know, capital for your team. And it's a mistake. So to me, unless I have a reasonable expectation that a guy is going to be up before Memorial Day, I'm not slashing prospects in redrafts right now. So,
what about in a those new Fantrax 40-man draft and hold leagues?
Yeah, see, that's hard. So 40-man, that means you got a 14 guy bench, or that's 27. Wait, no, 23 roster spots.
So 17.
Yeah, I could do that.
Okay.
It would have to be a 15-team league, though. It couldn't be like a 12-team league. It would have to be 15. But yeah, I could see myself doing it in like NFBC Draft Champions.
There you go. Okay.
Because he's one of those guys that if he comes up in, you know, the beginning of August or something like that, he could hit 15 home runs and steal 7 or 8 bases, and that has real value, especially if he does it with like a 280 average, you know, which I think he could do. So, you know, he's an advanced hitter, but they're just, I just don't see any rationale, especially if they're trying to get him to play some shortstop and learn that position. There's no way he's up before August 1st.
Yeah. The take home message basically for the listeners is with Nick Senzel, after you draft, you go into your player pool and you put the reminders on this player. So come like early June, maybe even mid-June, you pick him up cheap then. Mm-hmm. Don't wait until he gets called up in July. Because you will want him somewhere unless something weird happens. He will be productive at some point in time.
Yeah, he'll be the guy that somebody drafts and then drops sometime in June.
Exactly.
So,
keep your eye out.
Yeah. Go pick him up in, early July, or at the All-Star break, go pick him up. But I'm not drafting him in the majority of formats.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap us up. Bubba, thank you for joining me.
Anytime, my friend. It's always a good time. Great podcast you guys put out here. Great product, everything, the articles. Great thing you have going, my friend.
Well, why don't you remind people again where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work over there at Sports Degens.
You can find me on Twitter at BDEntric and then check out the website at TheSportsDegens. There are tons of podcasts, Bench with Bubba, doing that twice a week. We have different articles for different sports, fantasy, reality, gambling, you name it, we do it. I mentioned that Slack chat we're forming, so come all, just come and join. But more importantly, just hit me up on Twitter. I'm not going to be one of those guys that just blows you off. I'll help you. I like talking baseball, period, but fantasy baseball I love, so let me know.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, Bubba is like a premier DFS follow, but he's also just like a premier regular follow. So like if you just want to BS about fantasy baseball, Bubba's always chatting it up with somebody on Twitter. So definitely do that. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show at friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. I want to remind everybody to check out our sponsor, Vertex Betting. If you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his information for free. There's no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out Vertex Betting and see why it beats all other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet. With a $45 deposit, you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. We're going to be doing some cool stuff with Vertex Betting, so keep tuned to that. If you like betting, if you've always wanted to try betting, we're gonna do some sort of betting tournament. So it'll be cheap, it'll be fun, and Eli's going to give away a championship belt to whoever wins it. So definitely kind of keep us in the pod. I'll give away more information. The best way to get involved with that kind of stuff, though, is to go sign in or join our Facebook discussion group on Facebook, FWFB discussion group, I believe is the name. So I'll put the link for it in the show description. You can read all my work at Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax, for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, obviously. Follow me on Twitter. Follow the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational on Twitter. Those leagues will start drafting on Thursday, so definitely check out that. It's going to be all over Twitter, people tweeting out who they're taking. It's good. That should be a ton of fun, so definitely check all that out. And then go get the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide. Over 250 pages of amazing information from all the writers, all the podcasters at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. It's really cheap. I think online or an ebook is $4.99. A paperback is $13.99. Really helps us out, keeps us being able to give you guys all this stuff for free. And we put a lot of hard work into it, so definitely go check it out. All right, that's going to wrap us up for Bubba and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.